Okay, so our reading this morning is the second chapter of Nehemiah, which, if you're following along in your church Bible, is on page 485. That's 485, Nehemiah chapter 2, starting at verse 1. In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought for him, I took the wine and gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before. So the king asked me, "Why does your face look so sad when you are not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of heart." I was very much afraid, but I said to the king, "May the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city where my fathers are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire?" The king said to me, "What is it you want?" Then I prayed to the God of heaven, and I answered the king, "If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, let him send me to the city in Judah where my fathers are buried, so that I can rebuild it." Then the king, with the queen sitting beside him, asked me, "How long will your journey take, and when will you get back?" It pleased the king to send me, so I set a time. I also said to him, "If it pleases the king, you may have letters to the governors of Trans-Euphrates so that they will provide me safe conduct until I arrive in Judah. And may I have a letter to Asaph, keeper of the king's forest, so he will give me the timber to make beams for the gates of the citadel by the temple and for the city wall and for the residence I will occupy." And because the gracious hand of my God was upon me, the king granted my requests. So I went to the governors of Trans-Euphrates and gave them the king's letters. The king also sent army officers and cavalry with me. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard about this, they were very much disturbed that someone had come to promote the well-being of the Israelites. I went to Jerusalem, and after staying there 3 days, I set out during the night with a few men. I had not told anyone what my God had put in my heart to do for Jerusalem. There were no mounts with me except the one I was riding on. By night, I went out through the valley gate towards the jackal well and the dung gate, examining the walls of Jerusalem, which had been broken down, and its gates, which had been destroyed by fire. Then I moved on towards the fountain gate and the king's pool, but there was not enough room for my mount to get through. So I went up the valley by night, examining the wall. Finally, I turned back and re-entered through the valley gate. The official did not know where I had gone or what I was doing, because I had yet said nothing to the Jews or the priests or nobles or officials or any others who would be doing the work. Then I said to them, "You see the trouble we are in. Jerusalem lies in ruins, and its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, and we will no longer be in disgrace." I also told them about the gracious hand of my God upon me and what the king had said to me. They replied, "Let us start rebuilding." So they began the good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite official, and Geshem the Arab heard about it, they mocked and ridiculed us. "What is this you are doing?" they asked. "Are you rebelling against the king?" I answered them by saying, "The God of heaven will give us success. We, his servants, will start rebuilding. But as for you, you have no share in Jerusalem or any claim or historic right to it." Amen. You'll know the proverb, "strike while the iron is hot." It's a phrase that pushes us to action when the time is right. And in this chapter of Nehemiah, we come to such a moment. Last week, Dan led us through the first chapter of Nehemiah, and we left our titular hero weeping and praying over the news of the ruined Jerusalem. This book of Nehemiah can be used to illustrate the damaged and ruined areas of our own lives that need to be rebuilt, repaired, or recovered. And perhaps in the next few weeks, as we journey through Nehemiah, we might just find some practical help on how to reclaim a ruined life. But this is where we find Nehemiah at the start of chapter 2. In the month of Nisan, of the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought for him, I took the wine and gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before. So the king asked me, why does your face look so sad when you're not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of heart. I was very much afraid, but I said to the king, may the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when the city where my ancestors are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire? The king said to me, what is it you want? And I prayed to the God of heaven. Last week, Dan pointed out the difference to us in the timings of chapter 1 and 2. So chapter 1 takes place in the month of Kislev, which is roughly December, and chapter 2 takes place in the month of Nisan, which is roughly April. So 4 months have passed, and Nehemiah doesn't say why it took him so long to bring his problem to the king, but perhaps being a man of prayer, as we have seen, he was waiting for the Lord to indicate that time, which came in the month of Nisan. And God can often work like that today. We can be so impatient, can't we, in our click-and-buy generation where everything is at the touch of a button. We can be so impatient. I don't watch a lot of live television these days. I tend to watch things on like Netflix or iPlayer. But our Tuesday night tradition in the house now is we will watch Great British Bake Off. And every time the adverts come on, this little part of me just starts to cry inside because I've not watched an advert in years. We're so impatient. I can't wait 5 minutes to find out who's won the technical challenge that week. And we can be the exact same with our prayers. We want them answered now. And not that we shouldn't pray with expectation, but God does sometimes delay. But Scripture teaches us to persevere in prayer, to keep praying until an answer comes. And this is what Nehemiah has been doing. And it is made evident as it's written all over Nehemiah's face. He's gone months without letting this news affect his work, but how could he now hold back his grief? And the king notices and asks him what's wrong. He tells him, and he tells us, that he was very much afraid. Now, the king's concern might sound pretty innocuous. The king's perhaps genuinely concerned about the welfare of his trusted servant, but Nehemiah perhaps has good reason to feel afraid in this moment. You see, he's the king's cupbearer. One of his main jobs is to taste the wine to see if it had been poisoned. In the days of ancient monarchs, the only way to get someone off the throne was assassination. Rather a dangerous job that Nehemiah had. The man responsible for this would need to be a man of integrity, always above suspicion. And if the king happened to become suspicious or distrustful, Nehemiah couldn't just lose his job, he could lose his head. This is perhaps why he was very much afraid. And though this is a moment of danger, it's also a moment of opportunity, which Nehemiah senses. This is God's open door. Nehemiah shoots up a prayer that probably sounded something like, help. And maybe you've prayed that kind of prayer before. And with that prayer, Nehemiah makes his response. I answered the king, if it pleases the king and if your servant has found favor in his sight, let him send me to the city in Judah where my ancestors are buried so that I can rebuild it. Then the king, with the queen sitting beside him, asked me, how long will your journey take and when will you get back? If it pleased the king to send me, so I set a time. I also said to him, if it pleases the king, may I have letters to the governors of Trans-Euphrates so that they will provide me with safe conduct until I arrive in Judah. And may I have a letter to Asaph, keeper of the royal park, so he will give me timber to make beams for the gates of the citadel by the temple, for the city wall, and for the residence I will occupy. And because the gracious hand of God was upon me, the king granted my request. At first, this request, it maybe doesn't seem like much, but when we read this in line with the book of Ezra that goes alongside, we find this is a really big request. And to briefly sum it up, in Ezra, when the Israelites started to rebuild Jerusalem, the other people in that region got together and wrote a letter to King Artaxerxes telling him what was going on, and that if the Israelites completed this work, it would end up being big trouble for him. So the king issued a statement saying, no, there'll be no rebuilding of the city, no rebuilding of the gates or walls, no rebuilding of the house of worship. And those people took that statement and basically forced the Israelites to stop the work. So what Nehemiah isn't doing here is just asking for time off to go away for a while. He's asking the king to reverse his entire foreign policy. But Nehemiah's response is also quite tactful. He doesn't refer to Jerusalem by name, perhaps for those reasons. Instead, he just talks about the city where his ancestors are buried. And ancient kings were greatly concerned with their death and their burial. You know, we can just take a look at the pyramids, for example. The king would have been quite sympathetic to the desire of Nehemiah to restore the resting place of his ancestors. So Nehemiah sets a time for which he'll be gone, and he's actually gone for 12 years. So not only did he need sufficient time, he needed to be able to travel safely, which is why he gets those rites of passage, the notes to provide him safety. And we find out later in the book that not only did this give him diplomatic immunity, it also meant he was appointed governor of Judah. Nehemiah also needs the right resources. He asks for special timber from the king's own forest, and this may have been the same forest that Solomon used to build the original temple. So next we get the account of Nehemiah's journey. I went to the governors of Trans-Euphrates and gave them the king's letters. The king had also sent army officers and cavalry with me. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard about this, they were very much disturbed that someone had come to promote the welfare of the Israelites. We see here that Nehemiah not only went with a military escort, but that the full authority of the king was behind him. And this is where we encounter the first enemies of Nehemiah, Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah